positively revolting.
The Romans were the masters when Jesus walked the land. In Judea and in Galilee they ruled with an iron hand. And the poor were sick with hunger, and the rich were clothed in splendor, and the rebels, whipped and crucified, hung rotting as a warning. And Jesus knew the answer. Give unto Caesar what is Caesar's. Said, love your enemies. But Judas was a zealot, and he wanted to be free. Resist, he said, the Romans' tyranny. Now Jesus was a conjurer, and miracles were his game. And he fed the hungry thousands, and they glorified his name. He cured the lame and the lepers, and he calmed the wind and the weather. And the wretched flocked to touch him, so their troubles would be taken. And Jesus knew the answer. All you who labor, all you who suffer, only believe in me. But Judas sought a world where no one starved or begged for bread. The poor are always with us, Jesus said. So stand up for Judas and the cause that Judas served. It was Jesus who betrayed the poor with his word. Now Jesus sowed division where none had been before. Not the slave against the master, but the poor against the poor. Set son to rise up against father, and brother to fight against brother. For he that is not with me is against me, was his teaching. Said Jesus, I am the answer. You unbelievers shall burn forever, shall die in your sins. Not sheep and goats, said Judas, but together we may dare shake off the chains of tyranny we share. So stand up for Judas and the cause that Judas served. It was Jesus who betrayed the poor with his word. Jesus stood upon the mountain with a distance in his eyes. I am the way, the life, he cried, the light that never dies. So renounce all earthly treasures and pray to your heavenly Father. And he pacified the hopeless with the hope of life eternal. Said Jesus, I am the answer. And you hunger, only remember your rewards in heaven. So Jesus preached the other world, but Judas wanted this, and he betrayed his master with a kiss. So stand up for Judas and the cause that Judas served. It was Jesus who betrayed the poor with his word. By sword and gun and crucifix, Christ's gospel has been spread. 2,000 cruel years have shown the way that Jesus led. The heretics burned in torture, and the butcher and bloody crusaders. The bombs and rockets sanctified that rained down death from heaven. They followed Jesus. They knew the answer. All unbelievers must be believers, or else be broken. So place no trust in saviors, Judas said, for everyone must be to his or her own self a son.
And that was a lovely little ditty from Dick Goggins, Stand Up for Judas, and full of thought-provoking lyrics to get us started here on a cold and wintry morning in Portland, Oregon. You, my friends, are listening to Positively Revolting Talk Radio. And I'm Melody Silverwolf, and my lovely co-host, Ani Haynes, will be joining us in just a moment. But today we wanted to talk about, oh, so many things. Yes, indeed, it is the season of Solsta, Krista, Kwanzaa, New Year's, Yule, what have you. There's oh, so many. And today's Festivus, of course, for those of you who like to celebrate Festivus. Oh, so many holidays and intolerance is running rampant around the country. There have been all kinds of very bizarre incidents going on, very sad and very, you know, just really unnecessary kinds of things have been going on. A lot of posturing, a lot of hateful things have been happening. And we want to talk about religious intolerance in the, you know, in the time of peace on earth, goodwill to men, so-called. And the fact, of course, that we are bombing the heck out of Iraq as we speak. Many people are suffering in Iraq at the hands of our foreign policy, while we're happily, rushing around, spending all kinds of time and gas, consuming tchotchkes here for, you know, the aforementioned consumptive holidays. And so that's going to be our show today, and we're going to, of course, be opening the phones for your questions, comments, participation, etc. So I just kind of wanted to tell you a little bit about what we have here to talk about this morning. Some really, really strange things, kind of all over the map. Let's start out with this one. Oh, boy. These are from, let's see. This is from, I think this is from Tennessee Guerrilla Women, which is, this. A lot of these are from the Internet. The URL is GorillaWomenTN, this is the abbreviation for Tennessee.blogspot.com, if you'd like to look this up. And it's a news story. Nashville Metro Council endorses Jesus. Okay, it says last night, well, that would be Tuesday night, the Nashville Metropolitan Council passed a resolution affirming that Jesus was, quote, an actual man. And the story says, I kid you not, I think it's safe to assume that the Christian governing body means Jesus was a macho, heterosexual white man who would be driving an SUV and living in the suburbs with a wife and two children if only he were alive today. So she's quite irate about this. She says, the Music City USA Metro Council went so far as to say that Jesus, quote-unquote, impacted the USA more than the rest of the world. Oh, boy. So I just have to share a few highlights of this resolution. Now, mind you, I mean, this is just meaningless posturing from a Metro Council, but obviously they were prompted to do this by some of their citizens. And since this is a time when, you know, we are supposed to be respecting others' religious traditions and be peaceful and all getting along, as Rodney King says, it just seems a little remarkable. And it says, whereas Christmas is derived from the act of celebrating the Mass of Christ, whereas Jesus is an actual man who was born over 2,000 years ago, and his teachings in life were so extraordinary that they've profoundly impacted the entire world, especially the USA. And whereas 90% of Americans consider themselves Christians, which is not true, and whereas the vast majority of Americans are not offended by use of the words Christmas and Merry Christmas, whereas it is fitting and proper that the Metro Council of Nashville and Davidson County states it affirms and supports the use of the words Christmas or Merry Christmas, instead of nondescript generic terms such as Happy Holidays, Winter Festival, and the like. Now let it be resolved that we go on record as affirming and supporting the use of the words Christmas or Merry Christmas instead of the aforementioned terms. And this Metropolitan Clerk is directed to send a copy of this resolution to the mayor. Oh, now that's, I mean, earth-shaking news from Nashville, Tennessee. I mean, what the bejeebies?
Holy bejeebies, indeed. And well said, Melody. Well said.
I'm appalled is close, but that we're just getting started. There's oh so many horrible stories to go. That's just the warm-up. Just like, why did they feel the need to do this? And what is it supposed to accomplish besides offending people who aren't of that belief?
There's a scary trend. Well, there's a scary trend of people who are in the majority, who are in the dominant paradigm, who are the mainstream, to put forth the idea, the vision, the concept that they are in fact under attack and victimized.
Yes, so there's a war against Christmas and Christians in this country, according to Bill O'Reilly.
I have met several Christians and spoken to them over the last year who feel very sincerely that they are targeted for their, and I will actually go further here, for their rather conservative, most sort of, shall we say, fundamentally mainstream, you know, Christian worldviews. We're not talking, you know, the peacenik sort of Christians who are actively being persecuted and spied upon by
the
administration.
We're talking about, like, you know, Methodists or something, right?
No, we're talking, like, the more conservative, the 700 Club
Baptist,
watchers,
maybe.
The,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm not ascribing mm-hmm. an actual denomination. Mm-hmm. You know, there are, I think it crosses actually quite a few denominations, but we are talking about people who are watching, you know, Pat Robertson. We are talking about people who are, you know, I think Christian broadcasts, actually, when you talk about media, we often talk about the mainstream media, the corporate-owned media. Let us not forget, Christian broadcast is
huge.
Huge.
And also very scary in many ways.
And leaking into yes. mainstream media here, mm-hmm. there, and everywhere.
Well, I think the deal is that they're just not used to having to, they're having their views be challenged in any way. I don't mean that you go up and you say, well, why are you a Christian? But the fact that, you know, they might see a lot of their neighbors have other kinds of religious things up, or maybe they just don't have anything, or they don't celebrate Christmas, they're not really into
that,
it. I think that they're just not used
not
to
account,
that.
That does not account for the active, the active promotion of the idea.
Well, by Bill O'Reilly, are, by for one, of course.
No, let me finish my sentence. That they are actually being persecuted,
mm-hmm.
you know, and not just around Christmas. Really?
Yeah, we're out to get them.
So, yeah, exactly. That Christians are about to be outlawed.
Mm-hmm.
That Christianity is,
right.
you know, is about to be outlawed.
And of course, it worked really well with the Christian, right? With the, you know, I think there's a great analogy to the abortion issue. Before the early 70s, nobody cared about abortion. It wasn't something anybody politically was interested in. But then the religious right figured out that they could make political hay out of it. And so just as they did with the abortion issue, they succeeded in mobilizing an entire segment of conservative Christians based on that issue. I think that the powers that be in the conservative movement figured out that they could also make a lot of political hay out of this. You're being attacked, Christians are being persecuted, they, quote-unquote, are out to get you, they again, quote-unquote, are declaring war on Christmas. And so it was very effective the first time, and they're trying it again. And unfortunately, a number of people are falling for it, which is very sad. But, you know, it has... I mean, and, you know, we can all snicker about, you know, the, you know, Bill O'Reilly bloviating about how there's a war on Christmas and all these poor misguided people who are falling for it and blah, blah, blah. But it has some very sobering consequences, which allow me to share this story with you. This is from Philadelphia, and it says the community group to replace vandalized menorah. Says the leader of a South Philadelphia community group says it will put up a new and brighter menorah to replace one vandalized early Tuesday. And if they tear the new one down, says Vern Anastasio, the director of the Bella Vista United Civic Association, we will replace it with yet another and another and another. And he says that's, quote, because today in Bella Vista we are all Jewish. He's making that metaphorically, of course. And we will not tolerate the intolerable. It says the group put up a menorah and a Christmas tree in a December 12th ceremony before about 250 residents. Residents found the menorah, which was mounted on a 10-foot pole, stomped on and destroyed early Tuesday morning. Anastasio says the tree was undamaged. He says it's obvious that this was an act of hate. Police are investigating. Now, you know, this kind of thing is just really uncalled for. As I said earlier, you know, the whole point of this holiday is supposed to be that we all celebrate love and peace and understanding and, you know, et cetera. And then when these kinds of things happen, it's extremely disturbing. You know, you may say, oh, well, this sort of thing has happened before. You know, people have, you may recall the incident in, was it Denver, Colorado Springs? I can't recall. Somewhere in Colorado a few years ago where... There was some anti-Semitic acts around the holidays, and many, many members of the community who weren't Jewish put menorahs in their window as a protest of, you know, these anti-Semitic acts, and the whole community pulled together, which was very nice. But yet there's yet another story. It gets better. It says, this one is from, WDTN, which is a news TV station in Cincinnati, Ohio, WDTN.com. It says, feds investigating explosions at Cincinnati Mosque. Police and federal agents in Cincinnati are investigating two explosions at a mosque complex late on Tuesday. All these things happened on Tuesday. Isn't that interesting? On winter solstice night, which doesn't seem to me, as a pagan, that's my high holiday of the winter season, but I don't think it necessarily has any meaning to sort of folks who would do these things. But isn't that interesting that all of these things so far happened on Tuesday? One of the menorah was vandalized Tuesday morning, and the explosions at the mosque took place on Tuesday night. And the Nashville City Council voted on Tuesday night to do all this. It's very odd, just kind of a strange synchronicity there. At any rate, there were two explosions at a mosque complex late Tuesday, about 2 hours after the evening prayers had ended. FBI agent confirmed Wednesday morning that there were two explosions, one at each of two adjoining buildings owned by the Islamic Association of Cincinnati. And it says, one of the explosions damaged a door on a porch at one house that had formerly served as the mosque. The other damaged an overhead glass panel in the front entryway of the new mosque, but was not powerful enough to break the glass door. And it says the complex is about a mile from the University of Cincinnati and is also located near several churches and Hebrew Union College. And one of the men who worshipped at the mosque told the Inquirer that there have been no problems at all at the mosque since the terrorist attacks of September 11th. And that this was totally unexpected. About 300 to 500 people worship at the mosque on a typical Friday, said Karen Dobdoop, who is the director of the Cincinnati Area Council on Islamic Relations. I mean, this is gross. I'm sorry. This is just really disgusting when we have people all over the country feeling that they have not only the right, but they probably, I suspect, believe that they were called by God. It's their duty to get rid of these unbelievers or blasphemers or whatever the heck they think they are. It's really, truly appalling. And this is happening in our country in the name of, you know, Americanism fueled by these persons. Boy, that's not the word I'd like to use for them, but I'm sure you can substitute some likely other words. These persons. Not to single him out, because he's not the only one like Bill O'Reilly, but he's certainly one of the leading persons that comes to mind in the shout media, as they're called, who, like, basically their agenda is to stir up folks who maybe aren't quite so well-informed, maybe they aren't quite so good at thinking things through logically, and they really fall for this, those nebulous they. I think we're the ones that are thinking of when they say they. Those evil hippies are out to get them. This is bad and wrong, and we must address this.
Yeah. So how are we going to do it? I mean, there's about 150, you know, other things besides it. There's a zeitgeist right now, and I guess that's what I'm most strongly reacting to, right? And the thing about it is Christmas, and for me, this is particularly crazy-making, okay? And I think that there's a whole lot of other people like me. And that's because, for whatever reason, you know, peace on earth, goodwill towards man, woman, or any other being is pretty hard to find right now.
Yeah.
And since we live in this culture, and this culture has celebrated Christmas, this culture being Americana, you know, this is where we are. This is how I've been raised. Whether I'm a Christian or not, you know, Christmas has had that message.
Well, yeah,
really interwoven with it.
Time of year, you're supposed to be extra nice to one another and smile and feel peace in your heart and all that stuff.
And you can certainly find, you know, that thought, that act throughout many, many, many different cultures
yes.
at this time.
Yes,
you know,
indeed.
I mean, in many different traditions, there are festivals of coming together. This is the hard time of the year. It's the dark time of year.
So we
need each other.
Party
we
to
need community.
Over.
But at the same time, you know, in this culture, it has been sort of labeled Christmas, mm-hmm. dominant culture Christmas. We all know, okay, I won't say we all, a whole bunch of us know, you know, the words to the Christmas carols that are playing on instrumental music form anywhere you want to go at this point.
It's like the earworm gone wrong.
We know them. I actually, in a Portland public school, was, you know, singing them in choir until I was in, I think it was in sixth grade they stopped that.
You know, still do it some places.
I believe that. But in my school, I think it was like, you know, yeah, 1977-ish that they were like, oh, wait a minute, maybe we shouldn't sing A Little Town of Bethlehem. Okay, so we're away in a manger. So, you know, okay, there's this general, I guess, expectation or message that's interwoven that peace on earth, goodwill towards man. Open bracket, sick, close bracket. And for me, this year, more than any other, that whole magic of Christmas, you know, okay, so there's this part of myself, it's my head, the voice that is my head, says, it doesn't matter. You know, atrocities are atrocities. If we're dropping bombs on people in, you know, in the middle of December, it's no better and no worse than dropping bombs on people in the middle of April or, say, the middle of July. It just doesn't matter. When you're exploiting people, when you're degrading people and the mm-hmm. environment, when you are creating war from yourself to the world and participating in that, there is no good time to do it.
No.
And so, really, you know, my head says to myself, self, get a grip. You know, it's just any other time of year. Then there's my heart self. And my heart self is absolutely interwoven with that child that grew up singing the Christmas carols, that grew up thinking that at least one day a year there could be a magical transformative experience of peace, that there was hope, that Santa Claus was a good man, you know, that there was like, you know, this benevolent spirit.
Hey, the Pope even dressed up like Santa Claus the other day.
That there was a benevolent spirit, you know, that would make sure that love prevailed. And it was comforting. And it was warm. And, you know, it meant many good things. It meant family dysfunction and crazy. It wasn't like, oh, the magic of Christmas was actually real at any time. But there was a hope. There was a feeling that this is a transformative experience.
But maybe next time around you'd have a normal family, huh?
Right. Something. You know. So there's that dichotomy, right? That heart-mind dichotomy.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to just acknowledge that
yes.
because I think that is playing into a lot of...
Of course it does.
A lot of sort of crazy making that's going on.
And a lot of this is not rational. It's very, comes from very deep things.
Yeah, absolutely. You know. I mean, heart-mind conflict. I mean, we're talking about the essential human condition, right? So acknowledge it. And then beyond that, I think that there's that same dichotomy happening. The more I thought about that the other night, Melody, the more I thought about that same dichotomy occurring, I think, on more or less a national level right now when it comes to... what we were raised to believe about America, about freedom and democracy, about the American way.
That our president would never lie to us.
About our, well, you know, I was 6 years old during Watergate,
but
so I don't think
was,
I had that one.
That was a really painful hairball for people to cough up then, and I think it's even tougher now because we've had 35 more years of propaganda shoved down
our
throat.
Well, yeah, that's where I'm going. You mm-hmm. know, that it's exactly... To me, you know, we have, again, this feeling. And again, just like Christmas, it maybe never was the most magical moment ever, you know, due to our family dysfunction or whatever, whatever. But we had the belief or we had the hope in our heart or, there was that childlike optimism, if you will. I think the same thing, you know, if you think back to your third grade, you know, your government, you know, your constitution, you know, the Boston Tea Party, hand over your heart, say the Pledge of Allegiance.
The
you know,
story
that
of
sort
a bill.
Of stuff.
Yeah.
Right. I'm just a bill. I'm only a bill.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly. And you look at that and you take it from then and your beliefs. And those beliefs may be current. They may have ended last month. They may have ended, say, yesterday, or they may have ended this morning when you listen to the KBOO morning news. I mean, they, you know, but if you have awareness at this time of what is happening daily in our nation's capital.
It's painful.
And you acknowledge that mm-hmm. that's what's happening daily.
Mm-hmm.
You have to then acknowledge there really isn't.
But Earl Blumenauer said this morning that he has hope
going
that the coming
on
year will be better, and he should know. So let's hope that he's right.
Well, Jesus, I hope the coming year will be better, too.
Well, politically, he means.
I hope the coming year will be better, too.
Yes, me too.
Everyone can hope the coming year will be better, but...
No, he really feels there may be some light at the end of the tunnel, so let's hope he's correct. And it's not an oncoming train.
Before I say anything else, let me say it's 8 o'clock in the morning.
I was going to say, let me remind you, you can't say certain things this time of day.
And you are listening to KBOO-FM, Portland, your very own community radio station. I'm Ani.
I'm Melody.
And here we are together, positively revolting. So I wanted to, I mentioned the KBOO morning news this morning. Because as I was coming in, I literally had to, like, pull to the side. I cried. I mean, there is stuff going on of really such monumental proportions.
But that's good, though. I think it's cathartic.
Well, it's important to acknowledge. Mm-hmm. It's important to feel the ramifications.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just catharsis. It's allowing yourself to feel.
But you can't have transformation on a global level or a personal level unless you can get that all out, you know?
Well, yes, that's exactly true. Because I think too often, much, much too often, we are, in fact, exposed to horrible, horrible information. And we are in a situation where we can't really let it go in because it's really sad. It's really, really super sad. It's really, really upsetting. And if you really acknowledge the impact of these stories, you're going to get upset.
Well, yeah. But, of course, so, you know, there's also good news happening.
Well, sure.
Along these same lines.
There are good news. There is good news happening. But I just want to really refer back. If you missed the KBOO morning news, you know, these two stories ran a couple of stories apart. You really should check out the morning news. I have to say, it's an incredible resource. One of these stories is about Bush. Allow me. Congress rejected a request by the Bush administration for war-making authority in the United States in negotiations over the joint resolution passed days after September 11th, according to an opinion article by former Senate Majority Leader Thomas Daschle. And that was reported in today's Washington Post. Daschle's disclosure challenges a central legal argument offered by the White House in defense of the National Security Agency's warrantless wiretapping of U.S. citizens and permanent residents. It suggests that Congress refused explicitly to grant authority that Bush administration now asserts is implicit in the resolution.
Yeah, right.
In a letter to Congress, the Justice Department acknowledged that the president's October 2001 eavesdropping order did not comply with the procedures of the law that has regulated domestic espionage since 1978. Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, established a secret intelligence court and made it a criminal offense to conduct electronic surveillance without a warrant from that court, except as authorized by statute. The letter asserted that Congress implicitly created an exemption to FISA's warrant requirement by authorizing Bush to use military force.
Nuh-uh.
In response to the destruction of the World Trade Center and a wing of the Pentagon. The congressional resolution of September 18, 2001, made no reference to surveillance or to the president's intelligence-gathering powers, and the Bush administration made no public claim of new authority until news accounts disclosed the secret NSA operation. Republican legislators involved in the negotiations could not be reached for comment last night. Okay, when you have an administration defending illegal wiretapping, like,
you're going down.
To the nth
That's
degree.
What you have.
I was just, what do you have?
You have administration that's going down the drain.
That would be
woohoo!
A healthy step for this nation and the world.
Yes.
Speaking of a healthy
Lance
step
boil,
for this
baby.
Nation and the world, two articles later, we find, in fact, that the U.S., in really a much more brash and in-your-face, hey world, in-your-face fashion than even I'm used to seeing in my unjaded self. The UN is facing an impending financial crisis, which could shut down the world body come January.
Yeah, it could have something to do with the fact that we haven't paid our dues for oh these many years.
No, actually, it has more to the fact that the potential crisis has been sparked by implicit threats that the U.S. will not support the biennial budget for 2006-2007 if member states refuse to back proposals for a radical overhaul of the world body, including management reforms that, you know, are crafted by the U.S.
In other words, so that we can make them do exactly
our
what we
bidding.
Want.
Mm-hmm. Since the budget is traditionally approved by consensus by all 191 member states, a single country can withhold its support and throw the entire process into disarray.
That's a problem.
Now, you know, people say we can't get consensus, like even at like a community level. The UN operates by consensus on their budget. I just want that, you know, and it apparently has been able to do so, though, these many years.
Well, they save their contentiousness for their politics, which is where it
I
should
just,
be.
You know, again, that's, I think, kind of stunning. However, now they have the likes of John Bolton in their ranks. And John Bolton apparently does not play by consensus, does not, unless it's his consensus, in which case I suppose that is exactly what he wants to play by. If he has the official idea of what everyone else can consent to, and I think he's good with
well,
it.
Well, can the rest of the UN, like, you know, vote to, like, spank Bush with a, you know, a 2x4 or
not? In a nonviolent, loving way, sister. John Bolton, the abrasive U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, has said that the UN's biennial budget should be shrunk into a three-month budget, giving member states a deadline of March 31st to agree to set, to agree to a set of U.S.-inspired reforms.
Yeah, great.
Feeling
you know
inspired?
What those are.
The 132-member group is refusing to conform to artificial deadlines or rush into a decision under threat.
Good.
This is comprising developing countries. And it's a group of 77 developing countries say that the UN reforms are primarily driven by right-wing neoconservatives in the U.S. who have made UN bashing into a fine art.
Gee, you think?
I just, again, wanted, you know, the G77 has told Kofi Annan that it's strongly opposed to the neoconservative view that the world body should be run like a U.S. corporation, with the Secretary General playing the role of the CEO.
I don't think so.
So I wanted to just toss in a couple of those sort of non-Christmas stories, because that is the general backdrop. That is the world daily that we need to make sure we are hearing about, knowing about, aware of, and that we don't just hear it and go, oh my God, what can you do about that? But that you actually allow it in, that you feel it for a minute. That you go, we have this administration out of control attempting once again in a far brasher, more manipulative way
to control
the world agenda.
Hubris overdose is about to take them down. But, you know, I just wanted to say
that without absolute concerted action.
That's right.
Power concedes nothing.
Well, but I think that even the power, the rest of the folks in the power structure along with them are becoming
are they
very
just gonna
disillusioned.
Fall?
I think that they're
like, just sort of their own weight. They're just going to like crumple.
I think we don't have to do much. I think it's actually possible that they may start impeachment proceedings at some point if it gets that bad. We'll see.
But
I think it depends on what Patrick Fitzgerald does.
They're just going to maybe they're thinking yeah.
What's happening is that we do indeed. We need to keep the pressure on our critters because the 2006 elections are coming up, and a lot of the Republicans in Congress are going to want to distance themselves from the Bush agenda. And so it's a possibility that it could happen, and we could make that happen if we just press hard enough. But, you know, before we open the phones, I wanted to just tell you that lest you think that as soon as Christmas is over, a lot of this, contention will go away. Au contraire, mon frere, because Our pal, U.S. District Judge John E. Jones III, I love him. He's a Bush appointee, and he smacked the neoconservative Christians so hard the other day. He brought down the ruling in the intelligent design case, where in the school board, which is now discredited and has been driven out, from Dover, Pennsylvania, was trying to teach intelligent design in this classroom. I'll have to share with you a few of the excerpts from his scathing decision, which was just a talk about a dope slap. And he's a Bush appointee, and he let them have it with both barrels. So now they're going to have ammunition for years to whine about how they're so persecuted. So it's not going to go away with January 1st. I got news for you, folks. 503-231-8187. Let's talk to our caller. You're on the air. Oh, they gave up. Who could blame them? Let's try the next caller. Hello?
Let's
okay.
Go ahead and
231-8187 is the number.
And in a little bit
while
slower,
we're waiting,
503-231-8187.
I will read you one of these little excerpts. They're just juicy. Let's see. Here's one of the first ones. We find that the secular purposes claimed by the board amount to a pretext for the board's real purpose, which was to promote religion in the public school classroom in violation of the Establishment Clause. Let me just say that these folks who tried to introduce the intelligent design of the classroom were recalled and literally driven out of town.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're out of there. It says that repeatedly in this trial, the plaintiff's scientific experts, which was the plaintiffs were the town, testified that the theory of evolution represents good science, is overwhelmingly accepted by science, and in no way conflicts with, nor does it deny the existence of a creator. And here's the money quote. It says, those who disagree with our holding, I like the way they refer to themselves in the plural, like the royal we. Those who disagree with our holding will likely mark it as the product of an activist judge. If so, they will have erred, as this is manifestly not an activist court. Rather, this case came to us as the result of the activism of an ill-informed faction on a school board, aided by a national public interest law firm, eager to find a constitutional test on intelligent design, who in combination drove the board to adopt an imprudent and ultimately unconstitutional policy. The breathtaking inanity of the board's decision is evident when considered against the factual backdrop which has now been fully revealed through this trial. The students, parents, and teachers of the Drover Area School District deserve better than to be dragged into this legal maelstrom with its resulting utter waste of monetary and personal resources. We do apologize if you're trying to call. We're having a little problem with our phone system, and it'll just take a moment. Our engineer is doing her technical wizardry to reboot the system, and so give us a minute before you try to call again, and we'll try to get you on.
Yeah.
And then here's.
I hope that works.
Let's hear some more from Judge John E. Jones III. This is so juicy. Here's a good one. The citizens of the Dover area were poorly served by the members of the board who voted for this policy. It is ironic that several of these individuals who so staunchly and proudly touted their religious convictions in public would time and again lie. They lied under oath. Check it out. To cover their tracks and disguise the real purpose behind the policy. It says the overwhelming evidence at trial established that intelligent design is a religious view, a mere relabeling of creationism, and not a scientific theory. Yeah, how about that? It's choice. You know, they literally had to leave town and are persona non grata. That's the sad part is that this is a small town and probably very poor, and it costs the district a lot of money, you know, to bring this suit. And so, all right, let's, the phones are now open again, 503-231-8187, and let's talk to our caller. You're on the air.
Earlier, you guys were just positively funny, absolutely. Things are so bad, but you were so funny, I was just in hysterics. Now we're getting a little serious. I'm grateful the temperature's gone up 24 degrees. My life has changed.
Me
it's
too.
Been a complete turnaround. I've gone from trying to hack ice to give animals water that drink a lot of water.
Yeah.
And just trudging around and I do work graveyard too, so I was just exhausted. But anyway, what I do is, listen to the BBC a lot because I can't handle the news. The BBC tends to be just world news and it's very, it's factual, but it's somewhat removed from the emotion of the news you hear.
That's the British way, you know.
Yeah, it's well, it's
we're rather reserved.
News about the world, and it's removed because it's just factual stuff. And this is one that I had heard on the BBC this morning. The European Union has warrants out for CIA guys.
Huh?
For grabbing someone in a country because it's wrong. You don't do that. And taking them to another country and torturing them.
Right.
And the warrants have been issued.
Right.
And also I heard, and I think this I heard, this is not funny stuff, but this is almost funny. I think it might have been on your news this morning. But Bush pardoned a Republican attorney because she donated money to to the Republicans for starting a cocaine network.
Nice.
I mean, big. She's a big cocaine network. And he pardoned her.
Wow.
So she can, you know, continue on. And it just is amazing. I just can't believe
it. It's naked.
And listen to this one. Walmart isn't giving lunch breaks.
Right, but they lost this huge
yes,
lawsuit.
They did. Class action lawsuit.
And I think that's another part of what I think we should be, you know, but looking at and talking about.
Well,
yeah, you're right. It's just
of
so
a
absurd
comedy,
and
yesterday I had to go to the store. I've been putting it off, but I had to go to a mall, and in doing so, I walked through a couple of malls, and I always go to the pet store. I'm an animal person, so I always like to see what's going on, and I hit the bird section, but I noticed everyone looked like zombies, and when I'd smile or say hello, everyone was like not responding, and I was just wondering if you've noticed the world is just odd out there. I mean, what?
I have sort of noticed that. People are sort of in a stupor lately,
and
they're kind of like glazed over.
And my sort of idea around what's going on with that is pretty much what I was talking about earlier. People are stressed to the max right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm looking around, and I have a pretty ideal. I mean, I've really created a good life for myself. You know, I am able to work and be amongst folks who are thoughtful and who really place a high priority on being aware of, you know, what's going on and all this stuff. And everyone is just stressed to the gills. And a lot of times when people are stressed to the gills, you know, you can go one of two directions.
Yeah.
You can get really aggro and really out of balance, or you can shut down.
Yeah, I have spiritual books, and I'm not talking any one particular religion. Buddhism tends to be really terrific for me, a lot of the Buddhist writings, but I have to go to the spiritual books and when I'm really stressed. And right now I'm reading on average about 45 minutes a night, just spiritual stuff to hang in, because my backup too, my people backup is stressed.
Uh-huh.
And so my bonding with the people, and if I need to connect with someone to make sure that the world out there is still somewhat intact, if those people aren't there because they're just having horrible things happen to them, I read more from my books at night. But I think the spiritual is so important. The other thing is, the reason I had called earlier but got disconnected twice.
Yes, we apologize for that.
Was because you were funny. And I just want to tell you, humor is really a good thing. It releases tension.
Yeah.
And I'm staggering around right now because I get up in the dark. I work graveyard, so I'm used to staggering around in the dark. But to hear you guys just laughing in the morning and just sit, you were so funny this morning. And I want to thank you for being there. You are, to me, the sisters of sharing stress relief.
Yeah,
and
great.
I love you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I hope that things, I hope things get better in the world. You know, I'm not, as soon as this administration is gone, maybe there's a hope. But
believe that things will improve, but I don't think it's going to be easy.
Yeah,
thank you so much for
hanging in there.
You bet. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Did you know that something I learned because I was investigating the law for a friend of mine apropos of this Walmart decision, the only reason that the plaintiffs won is because it was in California, in California and Oregon, we have good employment law. Did you know it is not part of federal law that companies do not have to give you lunch breaks or breaks at all?
Yep.
And many states have no provision for that. They could make you work 9 hours without a single break.
And do.
Yes, I had no idea. Yeah. I thought that was part of federal law. It is not. Mm-hmm. You know, we live in we live in such a fascist country, you people. I mean, this is just, I mean, people in so-called developing nations and third world countries have...
are rising up against the conditions we're now accepting.
Yes, well, some of them have better benefits from their government than we do. It's pathetic, really. Americans are so uninformed about the world. It's really not a good thing. 503-231-8187, if you'd like to call and talk about the holidays and religious intolerance, the so-called war on Christmas, the fact that we're at war, and bad things are happening.
One of the things, you know, I ended up talking to our morning news volunteers as I ran to grab these stories from them. To let them know how their work is affecting me. You know, we got into a discussion about, you know, have we, you know, what really can we do at this point? Are we past the point of no return? Those that are in power are so concentrated with wealth and, well, naked authority, naked power, the concentration of military might. That even if, you know, there was a majority of folks who were aware and active, it, you know, what's going to happen? Like, how can we continue to be engaged when those that we're fighting are so huge and scary and, well, willing to be so unethical? And we got to a little point in the conversation where, you know, we can really dwell on that. And to an extent, you know, it's good to think about, but only to an extent, because all of a sudden, you know, you start focusing on how powerful they are.
And you feel powerless.
And you start sort of creating that. But I think it's really important to realize that what's real isn't about any of this stuff.
No, it isn't. And you know, my answer to that would be also that, you know, one of those iconic movies of the holidays, the classic movies that everybody loves, The Wizard of Oz, has many truths regarding that question.
Yeah, there's definitely some of that. And, you know, the man behind the curtain, not so big.
No, all an illusion.
But I think the best way to remember that is to go to that special place. Go to your happy place and sit there in your happy place for a little while. Like, for me, it's woods. It's some sort of forest land, you know.
What if your happy place isn't so happy anymore?
Find a happy place. They exist. I mean, God knows I've had some of my most favorite and wonderful spots that I've gone to for refuge and for sanctuary and to communicate with my divine, you know. Many of them are, shall we say, annihilated.
Ultimately, a happy place is really a state of mind, I think.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, really, though, is a little bit more than a state of mind. Go someplace where you feel connected. You know, if that's the beach, if that's the High Plains Desert, if that's the mountaintop, if that's the city park down the block.
The top of a tree, whatever it is.
If it's your front porch, go there and feel connected. And remember what's really important to you. You know, remember the smile of your partner. Remember, you know, something cherished in your friend. You know, remember the community that surrounds you and supports you. Remember the cat, you know, that just jumped on you in the right way and purred.
Even if nobody else loves me, my cat always does.
Your interpersonal connection to yourself and those around you and to your sense of place, that's reality. Like, that's important. You know, this, you know, what anyone is making up as we go along in terms of this administration and its governance, that's all utter illusion. Just remember, keep things in perspective and be active. Let's go ahead and take a call.
Yes, let's take a caller. You're on the air, caller.
Hey, you're making me cry. You're so wonderful. I only have to say two things. Actually, three. When you're in Amsterdam, you look on the bridge by the Station Central, and you see there's a banner in red letters, and it's white, and it always hangs over that bridge. It says, "Abuse of authority comes as no surprise."
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then absolutely, you know, the avarice or avaric or hubris consciousness you're talking about is they're all going to get old, sick, and die.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, if they had brains, they wouldn't be dangerous. But on the other thing is, You shouldn't be called positively revolting. You should be called the living goddesses speak. Okay. Kebu is my refuge, and that's my happy place. I wish I could afford to join, but, you know, when you're a convicted felon, you really don't have very much money. You have to become super criminal and just renounce the material world. Ciao. I'm going back to Nepal as soon as I get my passport again.
Great, Ad. Well, best of luck to you.
Yes, indeed.
You can't be too lucky. You can't be too Irish.
And, you know, when traveling around the world, you see the truth. You don't have to just go to your happy place. There's so many, there's so many places you find new happy places every day, you know, and meet wonderful new people every day.
Yeah, it's places of connection.
People work like 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, and they make $50 a day. Yeah. They're happy.
Yeah. Yes. And, you know, many people around the world are happier in their poverty and their what we would consider squalor than we are here in America. Now, what I think there's a huge lesson there.
It's about connection.
Yes.
And perspective, too. You have another perspective when you travel.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much
for
your call.
Many blessings. 503-231-8187. Or you can call our office and get our answering machine.
It's about 25 after 8. So give us a call. We'll be here for 35 more minutes. Let me tell you just a little bit about what you'll be missing if you go away at that time.
You wouldn't think
they wouldn't
about
want
it.
To do that, because at 9, Cherie Blackfeather is going to host the KVU Report with more on KVU and community radio throughout the world. At 9:30, the lovely Chris Andre, who was one of the readers of the news earlier, interviews John Sugg, senior editor of the Weekly Planet, creative loafing group of newspapers. He began covering Sami Al-Arian while he was an editor of the group's Tampa paper. Al-Arian's recent acquittal on terrorism charges has been called a clash of civil liberties against a government intent on limiting such freedoms. At 10, Per Fagering will host a show on Syria, Lebanon, and the assassinations. Then at 10:30, dun-da-da-da, Pat McGuire hosts a special holiday Boneheads and Bigots show with a musical guest. And at 11, Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. Don't go away.
And, stay tuned to KBOO all afternoon long as we bring you music that inspires following Democracy Now! Moving on at noon.
And don't forget that today is Festivus, and you might need to run out to the store and get your aluminum pole for tonight's festivities, which include the feats of strength and the airing of the grievances. So
this is a Seinfeld thing, isn't
yes, it? Yes,
it is. I've watched 5 episodes of Seinfeld.
I've never watched
in
Seinfeld,
my life.
But Festivus has been explained to me at great length, and it sounds like a very fine alternative holiday.
It certainly seems as though there are many traditions being heaped upon it. That's a beautiful thing.
Festivus for the rest of us, you know.
Yeah, TM. all right. Let's go ahead and talk to you. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, Sydney.
Hi.
Hi. I wanted to wish you a very merry solstice and a happy new year.
And to you.
It's the holiday. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Solstice is the holiday that I celebrate, and it's celebrated, and this is kind of on the downside for me.
Uh-huh.
Just kind of very mellow holiday because everybody else is celebrating and I can just stay at home and mellow out.
Yep.
But I wanted to make the point that it seems like there's quite a lot of religious tolerance going around. We've accepted the Muslims and the folks of Islam and all of these traditions from the Middle East that people are becoming educated about and accepting. Why is it that I still feel very reluctant to out myself as a pagan in the workplace? I still honestly feel like I am part of the most misunderstood religion and the most feared religion, at least in this country.
You are, in my opinion.
I'm just kind of waiting for the tide to turn for us. You know, I know Starhawk has she's worked very hard to make us publicly acceptable.
Yeah.
And defeat the fear factor. But, when is it going to be okay for me to wear my pentacle to work?
You know what? I've been wearing a pentacle for many years, and I say it's okay when you decide it. You just need to do it.
Yeah. And if anyone, again, you know, for the time being at least, we do have that protection to worship. And, you know, if a workplace, in my understanding, if a workplace allows any display of religious affiliation, if folks get to wear crucifixes.
Yeah, as long as you don't have to wear a uniform with no jewelry or something
right.
like that, then you're golden.
Then you have the right to wear that pentacle.
Well, it's I guess it's not that I'm concerned of persecution from my employers.
It's from your coworkers?
I'm in a management position which requires influence and motivation of folks mm-hmm. on my teams. And if I were to be out, I feel that I would be in jeopardy of my ability to influence people because they would be afraid of what I might do to them.
Maybe you need to raise their consciousness a little bit.
Yeah, my response would be, how do you know they aren't also in some way pagan or outside the mainstream?
Well, I do know a few of them who are, but there are a bunch who wear crucifixes all the time.
Well, uh-huh. it would be a big consciousness raising experience for them. Look at it this way, you know, like Ani's partner is a tranny, and you know she works for TriMet, and I told her, I said, well, you know, I said, look at it this way. I said, yeah, you get a lot of opprobrium heaped on you by ignorant people, but I said, look at it this way, you're getting paid a lot of money to be a transgender visibility activist. And she thought about that for a minute. She goes, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, you're in a unique position here. You have a job and you're not going to get fired from it, and you know, I think you owe it to yourself, in my personal opinion. I feel I owe it to myself to be who I am and not to conceal that. Not that you necessarily share all your personal life with your coworkers, but, you know, wearing your pentacle, if they can't deal with it, that's their problem.
Because really that is, I think that is part of the solution.
Yes.
That, in fact, I don't think that pagans actually are the most feared religion in this country. I don't think that. Because, in fact, I'm watching Muslims get targeted a lot. Mm. So I just want to throw that out there, but I don't think it ever really behooves us to go who's the most, targeted, feared, whatever, oppressed group.
But I think there's a lot of that going around.
But I think that it's true that there's a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of misinformation and a lot of mistrust of what pagans are. Really, it's a lot of what I found more than anything, because I have been out as a pagan, since I was 16. And in what I have found more often than not is maybe a little tiny bit of trepidation, but wholly, on the whole, mm-hmm. ridicule.
And lots of curiosity, too. People want to know.
Yeah, there's been a lot of that. But I'm talking specifically the negative responses, which I have to say have been extremely few and far between.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Just in reality, extremely few and far between. And I usually have some kind of visible something or other going on where you kind of go and...
You just don't look like a very ordinary person in general. You know?
There's the fact that I am a bearded girl. But besides that, currently, you know, I'm wearing like this silver spider. I've worn goddess pendants. I've worn pentacles. But there's usually some outward display of you know, some off the beaten path spirituality going on. And I think to a lot of people, that's what they interpret it as. They don't necessarily know, you know, what the goddess symbol means. They just know that that's something, you know.
Yeah.
The pentacle, you know, from too many, you know, Black Sabbath albums
mm-hmm.
has been associated with, heavy metal and Satanism.
And my pentacle has the Venus of Willendorf hanging from it, which really, a naked lady, really freaks some people out.
That might be a harder road to start explaining from. It doesn't mean in any way that I think people shouldn't wear pentacles. I think that it's a beautiful symbol. It just, you know, means that people are going to have some preconceived notions.
But also people, one of the reasons that paganism is feared and not more accepted is because we act like they're right in thinking that we have something to hide, that we have something to be ashamed of. If you don't hide it and you're just real nonchalant about it and a real matter of fact and answer people's questions, then they go, oh, I guess it's not what I thought. Oh, well, it's not so bad after all. And if every pagan did that who wasn't in imminent danger of being beaten up, people wouldn't have those attitudes. So it's all up to us to change those attitudes one pentacle at a time, so to speak, in my opinion.
It really does take a lot of courage, and I guess that I'm actually a contractor. I mean, I still feel like I would fall under the protections of religious freedom, but
yeah,
it takes maybe just more courage.
Yeah, and you know, I think oftentimes you can find courage if you find community.
Oh, I definitely. Oh, in my personal life, I'm all good with community.
Okay.
Well, maybe you could start by wearing it inside your shirt.
Yeah.
And then if somebody asks you, what's that necklace? You could show it to them or, you know, little steps.
Or find a way. Yeah, just find a way it's comfortable for you. And maybe you don't want to start with a pentacle.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got a couple other ones that are what you're talking about, like the power of life, things that push the boundary a little bit. And push the resonance out, too.
Yes.
The spiritual resonance of other religions out there.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, thank you very much for your call this morning.
Good luck.
Best of luck to you in the beautiful new year.
Yeah, we all have to have the courage to be who we are, I think, because I personally believe we owe it to ourselves and to other people to be who we are.
In fact, I think we owe it to the universe to be who we are.
Exactly. That was where I was going with that.
It's one of those pagan thoughts.
Yeah.
There's no sense in hiding it now,
well,
Melody.
We're all facets of the great jewel, then we owe it to the rest of the jewel to shine as brightly as possible.
Absolutely,
you know?
True. All right. Well, let's go ahead and take another call. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Speaking of employees not having many rights, I found that strike in New York very interesting.
In that
there, even as a union, that they had, like, that they were, you know, threatening possible jail and all of these other sanctions. And I'm saying if employees don't have the right to speak up and or, I guess, strike in the event that they are unhappy with something, are we not relegated to a life of, I guess, servitude? I mean,
yes, in fact, it would
much.
Be. The problem is that in New York, it's illegal for transit workers to strike, so that they were violating the law, not just.
But you have to also go, well, why is it illegal for any workforce to strike?
Yes.
Because people in positions of power and wealth do not find it in their best interest to create laws that empower the workers.
I mean, here's the MTA sitting on $1 billion of surplus. And, you know, I personally think that the MTA was negotiating in very bad faith. And I believe that this wasn't just about the subway workers. This was a blow against the people, a concerted blow. Pataki wants to move up politically. And I think he was involved, you know, they quote unquote, he and some of the other neocons decide that this would be a good thing to discredit unions, to turn the New Yorkers who are notoriously liberal as a city compared to, you know, the rest of New York upstate, which is more conservative. They try to get them to have negative thoughts against organized labor. I mean, it was, you know, it's all a bunch of posturing.
You know, that, and I guess in a broader picture, you look at how unions have been demonized, but without unions, how do employees have any recourse for anything? And so it's as though, you know, I guess, you know, do you come under attack for, you know, if you lose your right to strike, do you lose the right to have religious freedom in the workplace? Do you lose the right to have any right about sexual orientation, about race? Because once you do away
most
with the
of those
union,
aren't actual rights. I just wanted to point out that. Really, by and large, workers don't have a right
except
to religious
race.
Freedom. We don't have a right to sexual orientation of our choosing and maintaining our jobs.
Well, to some degree, they have the religious thing. Like there was that case where the guy, I think it was Walmart, couldn't make him work on his religious holiday.
Well, and certainly now pharmacists are being able to not fulfill contraceptives and morning after pills because of their religious convictions.
Propaganda thing.
But it's my understanding that if you wanted to have a religious artifact, for example, that's not necessarily, you know, you don't get free speech while you're on the clock, basically.
No.
So. And just wanted to put that out there because some of those freedoms don't actually exist. Gays and lesbians nationally don't have protection.
No.
Transsexual people do not have protection to actually maintain their employment if they're outed.
You know, I guess my point is that unions for a long time have been a barrier by which, you know, if you were a part of one, for whatever grievance, I know my father's part of a public employees union in California, and in the event that an employee is fired and they believe that it is because of their sexual orientation or because of whatever reason, mm-hmm. race or whatever, the union has been their barrier between them and the employer.
Uh-huh.
And their union fights for them.
Absolutely.
And their employer... Go ahead.
No, absolutely. I agree that unions are what makes a workforce strong.
Well, in theory,
that
anyway.
they are the ones, as an organization, that can push your rights as a worker to the boss. So you, as you know, David, don't have to fight Goliath on your own.
Yeah. Well,
but also, you know, I think that many unions, unfortunately, have fallen victim to corruption. And that the local people, the shop stewards or the locals, may be really good and fight for you, but that as you get further up in the union structure, many of them have succumbed to the same
politics.
You know, the same politics and the same corruption that they of the management that they deal with, especially the most notably groups like the Teamsters. You know, the upper management of those unions is very corrupt. And I think that in many ways, organized labor needs to reinvent itself in this country to have any hope of a rebirth, because they have sadly declined. You know?
I think that it is trying to reinvent itself.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of activism amongst, as you said, the local
yes.
level and the shop
yes.
stewards and all that. There's a lot of dynamic activism at that level. But we are in a very unsupportive political environment to organized labor. So,
yes.
to put it mildly... yeah, but did you
know? I guess it all starts. You know, I guess the change that many fear in our society is the grassroots change.
Yeah.
And I guess if you look at the face of labor changing or the face of politics changing, is it not about those individuals who are putting themselves out in the front? They're usually the people at the bottom of the pile who are saying, look, something isn't right and I'm unhappy. And what comes to mind is, I guess, you know, our president spying on Americans, so to speak. And I think Americans themselves, those at the bottom, are the biggest threat to his agenda, not the terrorists, in fact. So I think the idea, even the idea of spying, comes down to the fact that it's the everyday average voice that is the biggest threat to the, I guess, the agenda of corporate America with profits and or in politics. So I guess the fight has to keep going, and we have to speak up.
Alucha Continua.
Okay.
All
well,
right.
You guys have a great day.
You too. See you later. 503-231-8187. The number to call if you'd like to join us. I'm Ani. I'm here with Melody. We are... the hosts of Positively Revolting Talk Radio here Friday mornings with you.
The hostesses with the mostesses.
On your very own community radio station. Let's go ahead and hear from you. Good morning. You're our next caller.
KBOO 7 a.m. to 7:30 a.m. newscast.
Hmm. Hello? Yes.
Well.
That was interesting. Let's try our next caller.
We do have... a 7 a.m. newscast.
Yes, we do. We were discussing it earlier. That was a very interesting call. You know, I wanted to get back just for a moment to our original theme of religious intolerance and talk a little bit about the so-called war on Christmas, folks. You know, I think that I really think it's interesting the sense of entitlement that some people have that I've encountered this before. We were talking about, you know, the fact that gays and lesbians don't have any right to exist legally or to employment. I've encountered this before where I've heard, I've read, and I've actually witnessed with my own eyes people, conservative Christian-type people, saying things like, well, referring to gays and lesbians, well, I shouldn't have to look at that. You know, that they feel that people shouldn't be allowed to have to see you, like, holding hands with your girlfriend or whatever.
They shouldn't
have to see that.
Beyond holding hands with my girlfriend, my presence.
Yes.
I think I'm they refer to whether I'm acting on it or
not.
Yes,
they shouldn't have to look at that. And so, therefore, I think that some of these War on Christmas folks, who are often the same folks, that they are angry because... other people dare to say, well, actively, not just kind of smile when they say Merry Christmas and walk away and go, oh, I don't celebrate Christmas, but to actually say, I don't celebrate Christmas, or I'm an atheist, or I celebrate Kwanzaa, or I celebrate Hanukkah, or I celebrate Ramadan, or I celebrate Yule or Solstice, not Christmas. And somehow the fact that other people have different views is a threat to them, that they have to have everything just the way that they want it in life, or they freak out, like sort of like that their room has to be just so, or they can't go in there. And it's just really sad. You know, I think it's very sad these people are so closed-minded that they can't accept that there can be other people in the world sharing the world with them that don't agree with them, that somehow that makes them feel like they're being challenged because other people hold different views. That's very indicative to me of people who are about on the breaking point, that they're about to break into many pieces. And when they do, inevitably, because I think things are going to become more and more stressful and they will break, then we're going to see a big mess. I think it's going to get ugly. I really do. And I think that this religious intolerance theme is just warming up for the main event. I do think that people are going to become more intolerant before they can become less intolerant, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, it certainly does look like that is trending at this time, as they say. And, you know, I think one of the reasons, one of the dynamic forces within that, we have the fear-mongering on the behalf of pundits, who obviously have a lot to gain.
And then you have this ridiculous posturing by people like the Nashville City Council declaring that Jesus had paid special attention to the United States of America. What?
Yeah. What? You have that. But I think, you know, beyond that, you also have people knowing that there's people having a deep sense of dissatisfaction with their lives, lack of economic opportunity, fear in their lives, knowing that the other is scary and possibly their enemy and potentially even a terrorist.
Yes.
You know, and so
we're anti-Christmas terrorists.
You have people with very, very, very misdirected anger, very, very, very uncontrolled fear. So I think one of those things, as people feel more threatened, you either reach out to others and say, I want to be safe with you, or you start acting strange and antisocially, okay?
That's my choice, no?
And
become a hermit.
And I think, you know, during times of economic distress and social alienation, hate crimes go up because we lose that connection and we give in to fear. And when I say we, I mean segments of our society who are really susceptible. And often this is disenfranchised young people who see no opportunity for themselves, who don't know how to channel that anger, that fear, that feeling like, hey, society is totally letting you down.
Many of whom probably went to really substandard schools where they were taught a bunch of bourgeois, such as the Dover, Pennsylvania School Board had intended for their students to have to receive.
You know, so... I think it's just important to see it in the larger context to start addressing issues of connection and economic opportunity and how do we deal with hate crime overall. Because, yeah, the religious hate crimes are going to, I think we're going to see more of that. We're going to see, but intolerance overall, you know, we need to really address that actively.
I am very intolerant of intolerance.
There you go. Good morning to our next caller. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, my name's Romulus.
Hi.
And I would like to point out earlier in my life when I was reading the Bible and learning about it, there is a passage in the Bible where Jesus says, do not celebrate pagan holidays in my name.
Uh-huh.
And religious scholars have all shown beyond any shadow of a doubt that Jesus was not born in December.
No, he was
that
not.
That Christmas was instituted by the church to cover up Saturnalia, which was a pagan holiday.
Well, also Mithras, some of his customs were assimilated to Jesus. But yes, Jesus, we're told in the Bible, assuming that Jesus was a historic person, we're told in the Bible that the shepherds were out in the fields with their flocks. Well, that only happens
September.
Well, no, it happens in spring when the lambs are being born, that's when for millennia untold, people until the Gregorian calendar celebrated the new year when the Chinese do at spring, you know, March, when the, you know, at that time of year. So it was much more likely he was born in spring than in December. It just doesn't make any sense if you use what it says in the Bible.
Or late autumn at the latest.
Right. But certainly not Dead Winter.
No.
Right.
No,
it's
not
the cover
the
for Saturnalia. The way to combat hate crime and hate thought and hate speech is with truth. So if you want to combat that, I would urge you to find that passage in a Bible, and next time someone starts thumping you over the head about Christmas being a Christian holiday, just show them the proof.
Well, yes, right. But of course they say, oh, well, you're just trying to trick me, or, you know.
Trick them. It's in the Bible.
Well, of course. Well, the problem is that many Christians are unaware of the history of their religion.
Ta-da!
They're very ignorant.
There you go.
Many Christians are unaware of their own religion. That's exactly
right. They only just listen to what the pastor says. A lot of them never really read the Bible, and they don't really know anything about the history of the biblical scholarship or any of that sort of thing.
And, of course, we're not saying this is true of all Christians.
No. But many...
But let's just say, yeah, many.
Many people, even who do read the Bible, don't know anything about the historical context of their religion or
and
the Bible itself.
In fact, Christmas, as it were, was not celebrated until, I believe, the 17th century.
Something like that.
Yeah. So thanks very much for your call this morning.
Some great points.
Good points to throw into the discussion. Good morning to our next caller. You're on the air. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for your show. And here's a wonderful exercise and resource to get through the holidays, get through this administration, blah, blah, blah. Do something positive with your community, family, that sort of thing. I don't know if you're familiar with the Broad Arts Theater, but I caught a show called Ambushed this last fall. Wonderful. And all these satirical musical comedy bits and songs, and you can't help but get involved. So I just want to, I'm not involved with them, but I want to make a plug for Broad Arts Theater. Just wonderful.
Excellent. Anything else there? No? Okay. And good morning to you. Our next caller, you're on the air.
Good morning. I'm a first-time caller.
Well, great.
And I'm 100% disabled combat vet from the first Gulf War.
Uh-huh.
And I want to thank
you. I'm sorry, hello?
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 Hello? Oh,
hello?
What happened to that caller?
I don't know what happened to that caller, but suddenly we have a different line. So
where
we'll say,
did Mr. Veteran go?
I think the phone, the phones have had to be rebooted once.
Hmm.
And I'm really sorry about that, and I hope that that man calls back.
The phone spirits are attacking us this morning. I am terribly sorry you got cut up. I don't know what happened there. It
the
wasn't
phones
our
are
engineer.
Very strange this morning.
It disappeared.
So. Our engineer is looking very puzzled and concerned at the board. So
I apologize to that gentleman. If you'd like to call back, we'll talk to you again.
And good morning to you, who we now have on the air.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm probably reincarnated as that. I'm sorry. How are my favorite Wiccans today? This is LJ.
Hi, we're good. How are
you guys been?
Pretty good.
Right.
Alive and kicking for me.
All right. Wow, what a woman you are. Okay, here's my take. I'm not a Christian man. I'm a Buddhist.
Uh-huh.
I've been following the Buddha for the past, 40 years.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Jesus teach to love your neighbor like you love yourself?
And that was certainly one of,
believe so.
One of his big quotes, yes.
Right. So what happened? What went wrong?
I often wonder if maybe there are some folks out there who are missing some pages out of their Bible. They seem to have, that page seems to be missing, the part where it says to turn the other cheek, and also the page from the Old Testament where it says, judge not, lest ye be judged,
mm-hmm.
let he among you who is without sin cast the first stone. Those mm-hmm. pages seem to fall out a lot, or maybe that's the problem. You think the binding
so
is no good?
So does the Levitican fiber pages.
There you go.
As a Buddhist, I find this to be extremely confusing.
Yeah.
And if there are any... evangelical Christians who are listening today, I would certainly hope that you can straighten this Buddhist man out.
Well, I think that there's two things. I think, first of all, there's the unawareness that we just talked about with our previous caller, the unawareness of the religion as a whole and the immersion in the God-centered experience as opposed to what your particular minister, pastor, or person is saying, and exhorting, the congregation to do. I think that, and especially if in fact you are more the 700 Club variety of Christian. I think so that there's that an awareness factor where people don't bother to integrate, you know, the actual words as wise sage counsel, but instead look at it more like, well, you know, we all have to accept him or we're going to burn forever. And, he said some stuff. It was good stuff, you know, sort of stuff. So that's one thing. And the other thing, I think it's just important to remember that Christianity was spread at the point of a sword.
That's right.
Forced conversion by forced conversion throughout Europe and then throughout the rest of the world. And that it was, in fact, used as a state and military religion to really concentrate power in the 4th century. You know, so that, in fact, Jesus himself may have said a number of wonderful, heartwarming, sage advice.
Or may not have been one historical person at all.
But also may have, but no matter what, the religion, the structured religion, has been used to bring hegemony, you know, to the world and to concentrate military and state power.
Yes. Anytime you try to institutionalize a person who is a prophet, you always get into trouble.
Yeah,
oftentimes before the prophet's even gone from this world, his or her followers have already created this institution which is guaranteed to not to be violating some of the principles the prophet themselves have expounded on. You know, it's unfortunate, but
thank you very much
for calling.
Just one more quick thing, please.
Okay.
This will take 2 seconds. The Apostle Paul said, all you have to do is open your heart. Have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you.
And you too.
So I wonder if we maybe got that guy back for a super quick remark. The guy that we lost before.
I don't think so.
Okay,
nope.
Well,
Robbie shakes her head.
We're terribly sorry, Mr. Veteran, and maybe you can call back next week. We didn't mean to disconnect you, so... That was the vagaries of our phone system did that to you. We apologize.
And, with that, we will see you just before the Gregorian New Year chimes in. And we hope that you will continue to be positively revolting. Stay active. Stay together. Practice solidarity. In fact, like your life depends on it, because it does. And we leave you with this holiday song. Bye.
So this is Christmas. And what?
Happy Christmas, Julie.
So this is Christmas. And what have you done? Another year over. And you won't just be gone. And so